You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Thanks for listening to the Best Practices Show. My name is Kirk Barron. I'm your host, where we take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all over the world. And man, I'm pumped to have you with us today because I got a good friend of mine. And if you guys are watching the conference at all, the COVID-19 Dental Relief Conference, you're going to see this guy he didn't really go from obscurity to popular and a great key influencer not around us. He came right by us, through us, all that kind of stuff. And so you're going to meet Dr. Kevin Grohl today, who's a great friend of ours, an awesome member of the ACT Dental community, and just a rock star and one of the true heroes in dentistry. And today we're going to be talking about a new way to look at the comprehensive exam and just bend your brain a little bit, because he's done some pretty cool things in his practice and you are going to love this. So do me a favor, grab a pen and hit the share button, stick around. You're going to love it. So a couple things I always like to say before we get started. You know, if you're a new dentist or a young dentist and you've just stumbled upon the podcast because it's growing like crazy, we're up over 140,000 audio downloads. Now, I don't even know how that works because I do all these videos. You guys don't watch them. You just consume the audios and you're going to see, if you bounce to the podcast, do me a favor. If you're listening on Spotify or iTunes or Stitcher, go down to that. See that little subscribe button? Just click the subscribe button because I want you to keep showing up every single week, because every single week I'm going to bring you a rock star like Kevin and we're going to give you some great thoughts to create a better practice and a better life. Dentistry is the most awesome profession ever. But the problems you have in dentistry, they aren't often the problems. They're often how you think about the problems. So today we're going to challenge your thinking and I know you're going to love this. Also, people ask me all the time, like, what do you do? I don't even know what I do sometimes. Like, I feel like I'm a therapist, a teacher, whatever. But really, our core business, we're coaches. We are dental practice coaches. So if you're a practice owner and you own your own practice and you're like, I don't know, my team isn't getting along really well. Gosh, I should probably figure this out because the culture isn't the best. Or, you know, I'm kind of tired of giving 35% of my production to all these PPOs every single year, which means I'm working one out of every 3 days for free. Yeah, I don't want to do that anymore. Or, you know, you're just thinking, my work schedule is crazy and I'm working 220 days a year and you want to work like 160 like Kevin is, then call us. Like, that's what we do is dentistry. You can have a better practice and a better life, but you got to get it organized. You got to figure out what you want. And you got to have your practice. Don't copy other people's practice. You just got to enjoy going to work and you will absolutely love it. And speaking of loving it, I want to introduce my guest because I love every conversation I have with this guy. It's so cool because Kevin, you know, you and I talk every single week. You always give me something to think about. I actually now am learning more from you than you probably ever learned from me, which is just a joy for me because you challenge my thinking all the time. And a lot of people know you. So if you're listening to the podcast, you've met Kevin. But if somebody's meeting or coming to this today for the first time and they've never met Kevin Grohl, give us a little background. Who is Dr. Kevin Grohl?
Sure. Thanks for having me again, Kirk. I appreciate, the welcome back. It's a platform that I really I've learned a lot from your podcast. You know, when I first signed on as a client of ACT Dental in 2017, I think I started downloading episode 1 all the way to 140 and just started watching them all. So, you know, it was my goal to be on this podcast. So to me, it's nice to be welcome back and I appreciate the invite. But yeah, I'm a general dentist out of Detroit, Michigan, and born and raised here. And like I said, I've been an ACT client for 2 years. Now I've graduated to, I don't even know what I'm at, but just kind of helping present and sharing my experiences through this journey of life. And hopefully that we can help others along the way. So it's good to be back.
What do they call it? President Emeritus or what? I don't even know. But you backed all these things. But I want you to talk about this. Like, we're going to be talking about a new way to look at the comprehensive exam, but just give us a brief journey, because you were that dentist that was working 200 and some days a year. And I forgot, it's like 160 that you're going to work this year. Is that true?
Yeah. You know, and it's something that I think it's so easy to get bogged down into the doldrums of general dental life, you know, and I was working 100 or 220 days in 2018 and running around with my head cut off type of feeling and doing examinations at the last 5 minutes of each appointment. New patients would come in for a hygiene appointment and then they'd see me for 5 minutes. And I just felt like very overwhelmed and drowning essentially in what is we consider, you know, general dentistry. And you start really becoming kind of resentful of the profession. And it's an amazing profession. There could be a better way. So listening to your podcast, I was very inspired because you have these people that are amazing, recognized speakers in the industry saying, slow it down. You'll be busier than ever. And you can be more fulfilled in your life and you can do more things. And the more days you cut, the balance of life that you can have in your life, but also still produce more money for some reason, you know, and not that it's about the money, but at the same point, the equation works out as such. So, you know, listening to your podcast, it inspired me. I would say though, is that the guests you had on were such big names that it was almost, they were untouchable, you know, and I want to say that I am an average guy. You know, I swear I am very much an average person. And if I can do it, anybody can. So I'm happy to help and happy to share my experience that someone out there listening can do the same thing.
Yeah. Well, it's very kind and humble of you to say you're an average person. We think of you way more than that. So, and you guys are going to see this today as we get into this. And start to dissect this. But I want you to talk about this because the second we got on, before we went live, you know, you started to bend my brain. And the first thing that you said, because I've been doing this for 25 years. A lot of experts say 40% of your production's got to come from your new patients. And you said something different to me. You said, my new patient exam does what? Like, where do you get?
Well, my comprehensive exam comes from my patient pool.
Yes.
My current patient pool. You know, I do a comprehensive examination on new patients as well. And we oftentimes discover a lot more, but a lot of times these things come from the practice within that you can, like you've said time and time again, you can form a practice within a practice. And what's inspiring to me is that you listen to people like Bill Robbins and John Cranham and Lenny Haas say 15, 20% of my practice is specialty cases, you know, and the rest is just your bread and butter MOD on 14 type of day. And that's an inspiring way because it makes it seem like this is also attainable. So would I say I'm 15 to 20% of my practice? No, I think I'm more like 5, but it's also something that I find a lot of fulfillment in. So that's why I kind of changed over my practice to try and go in that direction and continue to do so today.
Yeah. Go back to, so did you ever have a point where patients went through hygiene and they were going through hygiene, or have you always had, I'm talking a little bit about new patients, but also existing patients. Give us some perspective, at least on the, I guess what I'm trying to ask you is the evolution of this process and key things where you're like, you had aha moments.
Mm-hmm. Like, no, I'm thinking like 5-7 years ago, I'd have new patients come into my dad's practice and we'd see them right off the bat. They'd get their teeth cleaned. I would meet them after their cleaning. And I would see them for about 5 minutes, 10 minutes, or whatever it may be. And it's really difficult to really discover anything with the patient and build a rapport and trust with them, let alone say, hey, you need all this work done. So you kind of get in that grind like you would in dental school, where you're just looking for caries, looking for periodontal disease, looking for oral cancer, the things that you were trained upon. But quite frankly, like they say in Dawson Academy, about 70 to 80% of the patient population all has some type of functional disease or issue going on, you know, and that's far more prevalent than any type of, you know, caries or periodontal disease statistic is out there. So when you start slowing it down, you look at things on a deeper level, you start really understanding why this is happening, and you become more intrigued in terms of finding out what the solution is to this specific puzzle. So that's when I started going into something like occlusion courses. And I went to a study club around the area and started getting around my mentors who did a lot of this type of work. And it became something where I started gaining a lot of confidence because they supported me. I think it's really hard when you're on your own to really find the support and mentorship and gain the confidence when you're really kind of just moving in a direction that you don't really have out there. So when someone says, I've done it this way, follow me, I'll show you a better way, you got to listen to them. So, you know, I was very privileged in the sense that I had my mentor to show me to this study club, all these different modalities of treatment. So he taught me a lot of things that Spear and Coyce and Pankey, Dawson, myofunctional, LVI type of things. I got everything. You know, all the issue that I had was really, I was exposed to too many different modalities and I couldn't figure out what was working for me. So that's when I started, you know, going to Dawson Academy, because I met Lenny Hess and he said, I see it. I see you have a knowledge base, but let me kind of like hone in on what I can help you to straighten out that line. Right. So that's really my history with all this. And that's when it became my journey into doing more complete comprehensive care.
Yeah. Now you and I are big fans of this. We're going to get into the what and the how and the steps, but I want you to start with the who and the why first, because that, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's like a big part of what drives this whole process, correct?
It's everything. So I think, unfortunately, you have a lot of the people in the industry preaching that if you do this technique or you do this procedure, or if you buy this technology, it's going to make you productive and you're going to have a more fulfilled life and you're going to have a better practice and your patients are going to be better off. And you get sucked into that. And I think I was a product of that right out of dental school, because I heard placing implants would do a lot of those things. So I spent the $20,000 and did an implant course, and I don't place implants to this day. And I think it's just because I didn't really have a clear understanding of why I was doing something. And it's because I didn't know who I was to begin with. And that's really what it's all about in anything in life, is that you need to know who you are, which then flows into why you do something. And when you have a clear understanding of that, then you connect the dots with what and how you do it in order to fulfill that core value of what you're intending to do.
Right. So take us a little bit deeper into the who and the why for you. Like, what does this mean to you? How does it translate to your everyday practice?
Yeah. I want to impact people. I want to change their lives. And then from a dental aspect, I want to have a relationship with every single patient I have. So if I treat people with regard as if you are my brother, my sister, my wife, my mother, however it is, I have to give you what I think is what I would do on them. And so I wanted to learn more complete care. You know, to me, running around all day long with four patients in the operatories and spreading myself thin is not the way I would treat those people in my life. So I structured our office when I started working with ACT in a whole different facet, saying, let's slow it down and let's only do one column or two columns today and do more thorough analysis of things so we can treat them more appropriately. So then I said, okay, I want to really learn about what is happening with these people, because I'm starting to see that if 80% of our population has some type of occlusal disease or occlusal malfunction or dysfunction, why is that happening? You know, so that's when you start going into these conferences. And because I was questioning a lot of these things, I had a thirst to learn, which drove me to try and be the best dentist I could be for my patient population. And then I started really implementing a lot of these things into my office because I believed in what I was learning. And that made a huge difference in terms of implementing all those things.
Yeah, it's awesome. Because then once you have the who and the why, you need the team to support the changes.
Exactly.
Which is easier to do when you know the who and the why, right? Mm-hmm. Speak to that.
Yeah. So, I mean, through ACT, and I'm promoting ACT because I'm a client of theirs, but we had these weekly meetings, you know, and these weekly meetings, oftentimes I would go to the Dawson Academy or some other conference, come back and then literally educate them on what I was educated by. So it's doing two things. One, it reiterates that I know what I learned, because when you have to teach it, you kind of have a better sense of what you're learning, but also by teaching your team what you're learning, they now understand where you're coming from. Because it's always that adage that we talk about in dentistry. You know, these doctors would come back to the office on Monday saying, we're going to do all this stuff and it's going to be amazing and all these things, and give it 3 days and he or she is going to completely forget about it and go back to normal. So, but if you are going back to your office and teaching them and saying, these are the things that I want to do, these are the things I'm learning, what are your thoughts in terms of what we should do and how can we implement this best from a front desk perspective, from an assistant perspective, from a hygiene perspective? How can we change our what and how to allow this to stick better so our patients can benefit and we can benefit?
Yeah. So let's go into the day and life of what you experience with, like, first of all, I have so many questions. So, like, I always want to know the details. How long is this process? Are you doing one a day, two a day? Sure. Like, what time of day do you like? And then you also mentioned before we went live, you like to slow it down with patients. Sometimes you're like, okay, this is where we pause. So can you take us into the details, ins and outs of how you think in that respect?
Sure. I'm looking for problems. You know, I think we're trained that way in dentistry. So when you are having, let's say my long time patient of 25 years of this practice, sometimes they come in and see you and they have some type of muscle spasm, you know, and they have a hard time opening or chewing something and something's going on. That's an easy patient you can identify. There's something there that I need to figure out why that's happening. Or they break off a cusp on a tooth, and this is the third time they've done this in the last year and a half. These are easy dialogues that you can have with a patient saying, hey, you know what? You know, I don't quite know what's going on with you, but I want to spend the time to really discover with you why this stuff is happening. So would you be okay with coming back for an hour and a half of my time next week or so when we can get you in to then really sit down and we'll take the photos, we'll do the digital scans. And then from there, we'll do the thorough analysis based on my protocol that I have to then begin to discover what's going on.
Right.
And I think that's a reasonable thing because, again, I structure my office based on relationships and caring. I care about these people. I'm concerned for their well-being. If someone was going to a cardiologist and they said that, hey, there's something going on with your heart, I want to do additional tests, you don't question that. And I think it's the same regard for us. I think the dentistry, we get so bogged down in terms of, well, is insurance going to cover it? Or they're not going to pay the $350 to do a thorough analysis of things, whatever it may be. Well, now you don't believe in the process that you're doing yourself. Because I believe that what I'm doing is a benefit for the patient. And I'm going to put that first and let the rest of the details kind of figure themselves out.
Yeah. And that's what I was going to ask you is, like, do you ever experience resistance with this?
Sure.
You do.
I do. But I also don't base my well-being on the patient's decision of what I do. So if they say no, and I've given them every option or educated them in this capacity, and they say, this is just not the right time for me, maybe there's something else going on within their life that's going to make things difficult for them. And then they come back 2 years later and say, okay, I'm ready. Yeah. I broke three teeth now. I broke another tooth, or I am starting to see the shifting and moving of teeth. Or yeah, you're talking about those headaches. I can't get rid of them now. You know, it's on my mind. So what can we do about it? So they may say no at the time, but they'll come back. Yeah, and I'm okay with that. You don't take offense to it because, you know, people, if they're educated appropriately, will make the decision that's best for them. It's not my life.
Okay. Again, I have this weird disease where I love this. I like to learn about all, like, I just want to know how it all works. Mm-hmm. So let's say I'm a patient and you're inviting me back. So typically you mentioned it could be the next week or two weeks, like, out. And then I always want to know, like, what time of day are you? Are you one of those people that's got to be fresh in the morning? Do you mind doing it at any time? Like, and how long? And
yeah, I mean, we block schedule. So I like to have my most productive appointments in the morning, you know, so then when I get to the afternoon, I can kind of just almost coast a little bit more. So I kind of like to have those appointments in the afternoon, but sometimes it doesn't work for the patient and it just worked timeline with us and them to fit them in that time. So I'm not really so gung-ho on that, but I like to have that as a structure, and that's what my front desk goes by, and it works pretty well for us. But there are the occasions, the outliers that you need to accommodate for, and that's okay. But I'll spend an hour and a half and we'll take photos. So even with the photos, again, we're talking about implementing certain things. Once you start going down this path, you start realizing, okay, I'm taking a lot of photos. I need to work on my photography. that's when I got in touch with like Zach Sisler, who literally sat with my associate and I one night on a Zoom call and trained us in terms of taking better photos. I always thought I took better photos or pretty good photos, but he was like, no, we need to get you some studio lighting and stuff like that. So we'll set up all that in our operatory. We'll take the studio strobes and we'll put them in and we'll take the photos with our digital camera. And then after the photos are taken, which if I had to give any advice, that's one thing I learned is you want to take the photos first before you start using the articulating paper.
Right.
Or impressions, because there's so many times you take these photos after all that, now there's gunk in between their teeth, or you can see the markings on the paper. So I always like to do the photos first.
Okay.
And then after that, we get all that stuff out of the operatory.
Okay. Go back to pre-photos. So how are you setting expectations for the patients? You're going to say, okay, today you're back. So here's what's going to happen. Walk me through how you're communicating with the patient about what's going to happen for the next hour and a half.
Sure. I'm just saying I'm gathering a bunch of data. And for me, it's like, I don't really know what's happening right now, but I'm going to do the same protocol I do on every single patient I do this because it's consistent. And with that, it builds a lot of trust in them because it's like, this guy has done this before. This is normal. He does this with a lot of patients. They're not concerned about any of this stuff because it builds confidence. Right. So then on top of that, I also say, I very well will ask or repeat myself based on previous exam discussions that we've had. It's not to be insulting. It's just something that I'm just going through this protocol because I don't want to miss anything. Right. And there's also stuff that we may have covered in the past that they talk about. And then they take it a week later and they think things differently. And so, you know what? I know you mentioned this last week at our hygiene appointment, but I was thinking things through a little bit deeper and I do actually do X, Y, Z. So you end up having more appropriate dialogues or more accurate dialogues based on a little bit of time in between too, which I appreciate. So that's kind of my spiel before we start going into this.
All right. So then you go into the photography, take us what happens after photography and you get to the articulating papers. I mean, I want to know every step.
So then I usually will have my assistant take some digital scans of the mouth and, you know, using John Cranham's stuff now is really cool because we can do the virtual mounting and do all the treatment planning and assessment virtually and digitally, which is really awesome. And we're getting into that, which is really quite a neat thing. But through the Dawson Academy, we would learn how to do the face bows and the mounting and capture the bite and all that, which we would do along this process too. So you can kind of go in two different realms depending on what you want to do. But one thing that about dentists is that we do so many things to try and make it so perfect, right? And I think we get bogged down in that perfection where I almost appreciate the imperfection because it allows us to really hone in on what we do. So initially I took the Dawson Academy curriculum and went through the comprehensive exams to the T of what they did. And after you do about 5 or 10 of those, you start kind of reflecting, okay, maybe we can do this a little bit differently, you know, based on my style. You know, it's not saying that Dawson Academy is wrong. I would never say that. But at the same point, it works better for me if I do it this way. And after you do about 20 of those, you start really honing on this. Now, I also talked to my assistant about this. What would you do differently with this examination? I talked to my associate. What would you do differently? I talked to the front desk. What are you seeing up front that we need to change? So we have a whole different open dialogue about the things we can really tweak and hone in on. So we have like something that's typed up to give the patients of what to expect at that appointment. They know that it's going to be this much money and sometimes they're covered by insurance, whatever the adage is up there that they need to work on. But eventually we did form an exam sheet, which I'll show you right now with our screen share. And I'm happy to share this to anybody who's listening. This just helped me and it's not perfect, like I said, but it also guides me along in terms of what I want to do. So if you can see my screen, Kirk.
Yeah, I can. Now go through the whole, this is evolved and the importance of having a system like this.
Yeah.
So that you're not winging. Can you just talk about from your perspective why
it's it's a combination of what I would consider the Dawson Academy stuff, the global diagnosis stuff from Bill Robbins, some of the sleep screening that we do. And through all those three different modalities, it really kind of formed my own way of doing this. Now, one thing I would do is I would do these exams and I would ask these, I'd be like in their mouth looking at their occlusion or looking at certain teeth. But then I'd be like, well, have you ever had trauma to chin or jaw? You know, so I'd have to like get out of the mouth and then go back in and out and in and out. So I really want to structure how I do this in a better way. So I would ask all of the interview questions ahead of time. Before I even touch the patient, we're just sitting, you know, knee to knee or whatever we want to do, and just having an open dialogue about this stuff. So the first part of the sheet talks about, you know, what is your chief complaint? You know, what are you coming in here for? And then after that, you would go through the significant dental history. And it, again, it may repeat itself because I've known you for the last 8 years of my career and my dad's 25 years before that. But the repetition is a good thing because it allows for things to be more of an open dialogue. Any aesthetic concerns? Do you grind or clench your teeth? You know, and let's just go through this and I will talk about like what I think about when they say yes. And we also had my assistant talk to Open Dental and they made this form checkable. Awesome. So you can actually like click it and it would actually sync into our patient chart. So our occlusion sheet will be, or our occlusal analysis sheet will be synced into their chart, which is really helpful. So that was a kind of a cool thing that I didn't discover. My assistant came up with that idea and it made it a huge difference as opposed to having to write it out and then scan it.
I didn't even know they could do that. That's awesome.
Yeah, me neither. So this is why it's nice to have a team around you to give you these ideas, because it's just, if it's just on you, you're only one person as opposed to having multiple people to help.
Right.
So if someone says I clench and grind, you know, immediately I'm starting to think of, you know, muscle issues or wear patterns in the teeth. And then I ask you wear a night guard, you know, and then I have to start thinking, I actually have them bring their night guard with them because sometimes the muscle discomfort that they came in with could be attributed to the bite guard that they're wearing at night. So I always have that looked at ahead of time or while during this exam too. Do you have pain or tenderness in your jaw when you open or close? You know, and where is it? You know, is it right here? Is it your master? And I'm not going to try and get into like the details of all this because this is a full weekend course and the exam records of Dawson. But at the same point, it does give you some understanding of what you look at here. Is your jaw ever locked open or closed? You know, that could be a disc issue. If it's too far ahead of the joint, have you ever been diagnosed with a jaw joint condition? You know, is that a red flag that we need to do maybe some cone beam, you know, or MRI screens, because that would tell me a little bit more about what's going on. Side note, I do take a PAN with a lot of my examinations, unless there's something frequent. So we look at that stuff too. Let's see, do you have frequent headaches? You know, a lot of times people don't realize that the headaches could be attributed to dental. And so when you say someone's like having some headache pain up by their temple region, you know, that very well could be something that maybe they're locked in and they have a steep overbite or deep bite that's not allowing them to get off freely. That's overworking their anterior temporalis muscle. Trauma, that's always something. You know, I was even watching a Michigan basketball game this year and the guy got elbowed by a Wisconsin player. I'm not going to name names because he's a pretty dirty player, but he got elbowed in the chin and the guy was literally feeling his TMJ area, you know? And I was just like, oh man, he has swelling up there and that's going to be a problem for him. So trauma is a big one. And then I start going into like more of the sleep stuff. So these are we talk about, you know, stop bang, and you talked about that acronym with Mark Murphy, but at the same point, we kind of go through a lot of this to kind of screen, is there maybe a potential sleep issue? So have you ever been diagnosed with sleep apnea? Do you wear a CPAP or dental appliance? Do you have tonsils? Do you snore? Are you tired during the day? Have you been observed stop breathing? Do you have high blood pressure? Are you a BMI? They don't know their BMI, but are you noticeably overweight? Are you older than 50? Do you have a neck size greater than 16 or 17? Are you male? Do you breathe through your nose? Is it obstructed? Do you have a sleep position that you prefer? So all those things are screening for potential red flags for sleep apnea, which we know is at least one in four people and 95% of them are undiagnosed. So those are all things that really are important. So at that point in time, now I'm formulating all those answers in my mind that, okay, I'm starting to get a narrative that something's going on here. You know, they have muscle discomfort. They have clicking and popping. There's certain things that are going on. Their jaw's locked open and closed. There's definitely something going on here. So in the back of my mind, I already kind of have like at least 60% of what I need to know just by asking those questions without even looking at anything.
Right.
So yeah, so that's kind of a cool part.
Yeah. I have another question. So okay. Is your assistant with you all the time for the whole exam?
Yeah.
In this process, And are they taking the notes or are you taking the notes in this whole, and
they're taking notes in the back. Yeah. They're checking these boxes on our computer screen. And then this form literally gets transported into our Open Dental software.
Okay.
So, and I think that can be done with Dentrix and all those different things too. So
yeah. And real briefly, just your philosophy, because you and I have talked about this privately, but you've never mentioned it publicly. Just where does Airway fit into the future vision of your practice? And you've been transparent with me. Like, I haven't figured it all out. I do know it's important. And as you can see, this is a big part of your philosophy in the future of your practice. So
yeah, no, I think that the issue that I'm having is that by doing these complete examination type of protocols, I'm identifying a lot of these people have sleep issues.
Right.
And are having airway obstructions and all those different things. Now, I'm not privy to know everything, but at the same point, if I'm screening for it, now I'm saying, okay, I'm seeing some signs and things that, you know, really would reflect that you have something going on. Their next question is, okay, what do I do?
Right.
And then I'm stuck because I'm like, I really don't know. You know, I go see your physician, but then that's like a, basically a fumble, because here I am trying to be the quarterback here leading to success. And then they're not going anywhere after that. So then their physician says, no, I think you're okay. So I've gotten in touch with Mark Murphy after listening to your podcast and said, hey, I want to train our office in this. So one thing always leads to another. So then you start looking at, okay, he's going to come to our office May 21st. And then we're going to start lurking into, okay, what's the software that he uses? How does he bill for this? You know, where does he get in touch with the sleep physician so that they can get these take-home sleep tests or at-home sleep tests? So to me, it's, but you don't, those are the what and the hows, but you need to put the what and the hows after you already have a lot of the foundational components of things.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people are like, okay, there's a lot of like lucrative things within the sleep, you know, realm, but I added sleep onto this, or will be adding sleep onto this, because we have a really good core of understanding what we're doing in terms of screening for these people ahead of time.
Yeah. The cool thing about you is I think you get this, and I, correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of times dentists don't slow down to go farther. And what you're going to do, what you're really pointing to, this isn't so much about sleep or airway or all those things, is you're really getting to know the patient and really understand and slow. So many dentists run so fast, looking for crown after crown after crown. And you're not preoccupied with how many crowns can I find? Like, I'm just going to slow this down and get each one of these people healthier. And in the end, everybody wins, right?
Yeah. Oh, and full disclosure, I find too many things. So now I don't have any places to put these people because I'm having these dialogues.
Go back to that. You find too many, some things you don't want to know. Like, yeah,
just like, oh, I don't want to see that they have muscle tension.
Right.
Because now I need to find time in my schedule to be able to diagnose and put this in my schedule to figure out what they need.
Yeah.
And it's a great thing. I mean, that's a great problem to have. But at the same point, especially during COVID time, people are stressed. And a lot of times these underlying issues are really coming to the forefront because they had these all along. Right. We just weren't addressing them because we didn't recognize it to begin with. So slowing it down, you end up becoming busier. And I heard that time and time again from all these different guests in your podcast. And now here I am saying the same thing because I walked it, I'm living it, and I know how that goes. So it's a beautiful thing, but it's also, you know, kind of a,
it's problem. Counterintuitive though. It's hard. It's not it something is. You go, oh, yeah, I'm totally going to try that. You know,
exactly,
you have to experience that a little bit on accident and go, wow, I wasn't stressed out about this one. I actually got to know her, you know?
So then going through the sheet again, now I'm getting my ruler out. You know, we have a digital caliper that Bill Robbins talks about with his global diagnosis. We're starting to measure the mid face and the lower third of the face to make sure those are a one-to-one ratio. We look at the lip length. We look at the dental midline and we look at the facial midline, the central repose. We look at the gingival line in relation to the smile, lip mobility. We look at overjet, overbite, you know, max opening. You know, that's a big one. Does the chin deviate when they're doing the max opening? What's their protrusion? What's their right and lateral excursions? What are those measurements? And you learn all this stuff at these academies. So it could be overwhelming for me to say all this stuff, but you do it time and time again, it becomes second nature. Right. Start to look at the clicking and popping of the TMJ to make sure that that's good. At what point does it click and pop? Does it happen before 20 millimeters? Because that would be more of a a rotational component, or after that would be more translation. So you're starting to really come up with things in your mind about what's happening. Looking more, you know, at muscle, we look at the deep superficial masseters, the deep masseters, we look at the anterior temporalis, the posterior temporalis, the medial pterygoid, lateral pterygoid. You learn how to do these things. You know, and that's something that it's very easy to do a muscle palpation examination. And oftentimes, if patients are in hygiene or their new patient exam, I'll feel around all those different things. How does this feel? Does this feel okay? Do you have tension here? You know, does this one feel worse than the other one? Scale of 0 being it feels like a massage, 3 being you're killing me. What does it feel like? So if someone says I clench and then I feel their masseter and it does hurt, well, there's something going on there, because that's probably the reason why. Or if I feel their lateral pterygoid and it's firing like crazy, you probably have some type of lateral balancing or working interferences that I need to figure out where that is and why it's happening. Right. So maybe they don't have the guidances to get off those teeth, or they're overworking that. Maybe doing some Invisalign. You know, we're doing a lot more Invisalign because we're discovering all these things during the complete examination. Or we're doing more equilibrations, you know, because your arch form looks good and your teeth position are fine. We just need to kind of even some things out. Or we need to do some restorative work. You have worn a lot of these teeth down. We need to build your bite back up to a more comfortable state. And we can work that through because we've gone through this examination. It starts with this. So that's a really neat thing to be able to do all the measurements and come up with an idea about what we need to do from there.
Yeah. So once you get through this part of the exam, where do you go next and how do you describe it to the patient? Yeah. And give us a time frame. Like in that time frame of the 90 minutes, where are you at once you, I mean, ballpark at the end of this?
I'm probably about 60% through.
Okay.
But I know 90% of what's going on.
Right.
So, and the patient knows about 90% what's going on.
All right, go back to that.
Wait. Do you remember you talked about like your jaw locking, open, and closing? Well, that's because you have this disc that sits on top of the what we call a condyle, and that slides off and it gets in the way for you to close. So you set it above in our interview, and I'm tying that together now. So now we're co-discovering this together. So it's not my issue, but it's our issue that we're trying to work through. And oftentimes they say, no one's ever done it this way. You know, they always just looked at just cavities that I was trying to get filled. And I always felt like I was just running back and forth with needing new crowns replaced because they're breaking left and right. And I always thought it was the material, but I didn't realize it was a function of my or dysfunction of my occlusion.
Yeah. And speak to this because like you said, a co-discovery, the patient's got to be aware of the problem because you can't fix the problem if they don't know that they're aware of the problem. Right. And the real masters of communication, and I know you get this, is that the patient has to come to the conclusion almost before you tell them the problem type of a thing. Exactly. Can you speak to that a little bit?
No, that's exactly it. And then I give them a hand mirror.
Right.
So now I'm giving them the hand mirror. I've already done all of the palpation, all the different things. Now they're noticing that they have some either muscle discomfort or something going on. And then I start looking at certain things with the intraoral examination. Okay. I did mention that I forgot to mention, I do like a load test, you know, with bimanual manipulation to see if I can load the joints. If they have issues with that, oftentimes we'll do like a Lucia jig or some type of deprogrammer. And then I'll give them the deprogrammer. I'll let them sit there for 10 minutes so that the muscles can kind of calm down. I'll reload them to make sure I can do that. If I can load appropriately and I feel comfortable with that, I know they don't have a joint issue, and also repalpate the muscles that I went through before. And I say, okay, I know that you had a 3 last time on your deep masseter, but after the Lucia jig, how do you feel now? Oh, I have like a 1 there. That's a lot better. Even after 10 minutes of me just having that thing in my mouth, my muscles feel better. Right. Now you're gaining a lot of confidence within them that you know what you're talking about and you can solve their issues. So that's a huge thing from there. So, and then we look at the first point of contact, if there's a slide, which direction it moves, all those different things. So then I give them the hand mirror. And I love having the hand mirror because now I can show them intraorally that there's something within their mouth that's manifesting these external issues going on. So we look at their arch. Do they have a narrow arch? Maybe that's causing some of their sleep issues. The malocclusion, the crossbite, maybe they need to have expansion happen, or maybe they're tongue-tied, or they have a scallop border around the side of the tongue. Have you ever noticed that your tongue is getting wedged between your teeth? It's probably because it doesn't have anywhere to go because your narrow arch doesn't allow that to move forward. So Mel and Patty score, you know, all those different things are kind of some intraoral examination stuff that you need to look for screening for like some type of sleep issue. Looking at their occlusion, some crowding, some wear. Do you notice that like your teeth look like someone took some sandpaper on top of the tooth and just kind of shaved it down? Well, that's your natural way of wearing these teeth. I never noticed that. Okay, let's glide side to side. Let's make sure you can get off those. Well, you're still hitting on your back tooth over here when you go side to side. So if you're doing that, that's why your muscle internally, the lateral pterygoid is tender, you know? So by taking that off, I think it's going to help you a lot. So they're connecting dots just as much as we are, but we kind of already had a sense of all these issues because we went through 90% of all the examination before we even got in the mouth. And then we look for mobility. We'll look for migration. I check to see if I can see the CEJ or global diagnosis stuff. We chart the length of the teeth to make sure they're all within normal lengths.
Go ahead. I was going to ask you just like, cause I love the perio part. How much does perio play a role? I'm kind of leading you with this question, but the perio part is an important part of your restorative process. Let's say I'm a patient, I've got functional issues, I've got, you know, aesthetic issues, and then you get to the perio and you're like, you know, type of a thing.
I'm also guilty as charged because this is not my favorite part.
Right.
But I do like looking at the perio from a perspective of, let's look at some abfractions. You know, is that some lateral excursion, you know, interferences that you may be having? Do you have a thin bone? Let's look at maybe some, there's some defects here that we can see. You see on the x-ray here, you know, that we can notice that you might have some periodontal disease that's not supporting the function that you're putting on these teeth. So I will have my hygienist also probe. You know, that's something that it did disrupt kind of my workflow. So I'll have that, but we'll double check and verify all these things because, you know, that's also a component that needs to be done. So it kind of bogged down my system and my protocol, but at the same point, it's also allowing us to kind of get there. So, but looking at it on a deeper level, you know, maybe they have excessive gum display. You know, looking through the global diagnosis stuff now, I know it's dental alveolar extrusion, or maybe it's some type of component that we need to do some intrusion or expansion to kind of get that upright and facilitate that. So you're looking at all these different levels. And I guarantee sitting here 3 years from now on this podcast, we can go over the sheet. It's going to be completely different. Yeah, and that's the beauty of dentistry. It's the beauty of what we're doing is that we are always changing. We're always molding and always adapting to what we need to do to implement different things.
Right. So. Now I'm going to give you a famous statement. I don't know who said it, and I want you to debate it and take it apart or validate it. I don't know who said this. I'll figure this out at some point. There are many treatment plans, but there's only one true diagnosis. True or false? When you think of that statement, like if you put the greatest minds in dentistry and they all looked at a case, everybody'd have a different plan, but like it would be hard to debate a really thorough diagnosis, true or false in that. And tell me your thoughts on that.
I think it's the fun of dentistry. So I don't know if it's a true or false type of thing. I think there's just many different ways of doing things. So when you look at something like this, of course there's gonna be different modalities because people have a different skill set. But I do like how Mark Hyman talks about, is this appropriate for the patient? You know, what is appropriate here in this situation, and include them in their interests and their needs based on what is best for them. So I know that Pete Dawson talks, I don't want to create a problem that's bigger than what I'm creating right now. So by all means, they need to be part of the solution too. Yeah. So unfortunately, I think we put assumptions out there that, well, they can't afford it. Well, how do you know that? You know, they could have just won the lottery, or they got an inheritance that they want to spend on their teeth, or whatever it may be. We can't box these people in. We just have to talk this through and say, these are the findings. How do you feel about this stuff? You know, I think that's another thing I don't like about dentistry is the fact that we're here to be so critical of these people. You know, all the time we're trained from dental school that we need to come in and say, these are all the findings that are wrong with you. Right. And yet we never talk about all the good things that they have going on. You're a really good brusher. You know, you really take good care of your teeth. It's just, you're functionally a mess, you know, but like we can solve those issues if we just kind of go through this protocol here. So yeah, I don't know if it's a true or false thing. I guess I didn't answer that question.
You ever see that? You're functionally a mess. Like, cause you just said it in a really nice way.
And I know, depending on, but I mean, that goes to the whole personality type of a patient too.
Right.
Right. So there's certain people that are, shoot it to me straight. Yeah. And there's other people that want to have like more supportive energy here. So you kind of have to read these people too, because not all the people are the same.
Okay. Yeah. So now you're going through this. Take me through how you, and now there's a third sheet on there.
Yeah, it's just the teeth. So we do all the measurements and we list like the gum tissue display and all these different things that we learn from Global Diagnosis. Okay. But after this, I always say, okay, how do you feel? You know, I know I overwhelmed you. I know there's a lot of things that came up during this dialogue. Talk to me. And I just, like you always say, just shut up.
Yeah.
Because I think we start talking and talking and talking, and then we never let them actually give out what they want to say.
Right. So when you ask a patient that, what do they typically say? I mean, what are some common response or notable things you're like?
Yeah. I think some people are like, you know what? I kind of expected a lot of this. I get that, because we talked about this last week. So I knew there was something going on. I just didn't know exactly what was going on. Or some people say, I'm just so grateful that you took the time to like get to know what was going on, as opposed to just kind of just the run of the mill type of situation.
Right.
New patients will always comment about how thorough we are and how they appreciate just the ability just to kind of look at things on a deeper level. So, and also I say, you know what, if you're anything like me, you're going to get in your car and you're going to think of like 20 different things about this dialogue, and that's fine. Like, email me, text me, call me, whatever you need to do, like to get that into your, out of your brain and have your concerns addressed. I'm here for you. Because, but that's my practice. That's how we do things. We're relationship based, and that's what we're going to do for our patients. So yeah.
That's awesome. And then after they've talked, when you ask them, how do you feel about this? Where do you go from there? Take us from that.
Yeah. Step. Once that dialogue kind of closes, and I say, okay, I'm going to combine all this stuff and I'm going to sit at my computer with your photos, with your scans, with this sheet, and I'm going to kind of determine what I feel like is the most appropriate thing for you. And then I'll bring you back. Either we'll do a virtual consultation or you'll sit in my office and we'll kind of really come up with a dialogue and we'll figure out treatment planning, what we can do for you, and segment that. Now that's a whole different dialogue that I don't want to, we don't have time to talk about today, but that's something that we can, that's the beauty of taking something like a Dawson Academy, Spiracois, Panky, whatever it may be, because they give you the knowledge of how to treatment plan these cases, but it all begins with having this type of examination.
Right. It's transformative for the patients and for you guys. Mm-hmm. Changes the hygiene experience for them as they continue, because everybody's working towards a plan, but it's their plan, right?
It is. No, that's exactly it. So I love it. I find a lot of fulfillment in this, and what are patients some, really enjoy it.
Yeah. What are some of the myths or misconceptions people have or dentists? Because you have a lot of young dental friends. Like, what would be a misconception as you watch this and they're like, oh, I don't want to do that because what do you think it is?
I don't have time.
Right.
I'm too busy, you know, or patients won't afford this.
Yeah.
It's not covered by insurance. You know, well, I don't know. I think it goes back to how you want to structure your way of your day. If you don't have time, that's great. Don't do this type of stuff. You know, you can continue to keep doing what you want to do. And that's the beauty of dentistry. If you find that you're doing what you want to do, this is my way and it's not going to be great for anybody else but me. Right. And that's the beauty of things. This works for me and it might work for other people in some facet, but I hope someone takes this and then tweaks it to merge into their protocol of what they do.
For sure. For sure. And buddy, I'm going to have you back. Actually, one of the next best steps in this would be to actually come back and take us through the consult and how you do all that. Maybe we'll do that on the next episode or a future episode, because I would love to do that. What do you want to say to a 32-year-old dentist watching this who might be a little bit overwhelmed? It's like, okay, Kevin, I get it, but I'm in PPOs up to my ears. Like, and I can't afford to go to Dawson right now, you know, type of a thing. What would you say to them?
Just start slow. Take it easy. I don't think we have to get to some direction overnight. And I think that's the most important thing, is that you're listening to this. And if you do feel overwhelmed, I hear you. I've been there. I know exactly those feelings, because I was cutting my grass, listening to Bill Robbins talk about this stuff and feeling very insecure and inferior with what I was doing. But he was been at it for 34 years, whatever it is, you know, and to me, it's something that, but the beauty with my strengths, the fact that I take action, I'm always moving forward in some capacity to kind of really do something so that I can better myself. So if you're going to sit there and feel inferior and not do anything about it, then that's your own fault. So do one of these exams.
Yeah.
Block off at the end of the day or segment some afternoon one day and say, you know what? I value this. I want my patients to start doing this. Take it easy and just start slow. And then one will build to 5 and then 10 and then 20. And then eventually you'll start building your practice around this. And you're not going to be as bogged down and running through the mill of PPOs. And I don't know, it could be better. This is a better way. It's great.
Buddy, you are truly a rock star. I'm telling you, if you have a study club and you're looking for a great speaker and you haven't had Kevin, have him come out to your study club. You'll be impressed by the quality of human being. He will challenge the heck out of you. He is a great educator, and I have no doubt you're going to be one who influences dentistry for years. How can I find you? So if I'm listening, how do I get a hold of Dr. Kevin Groth?
You can email me. Email is best, I guess, Kevin Groth, G-R-O-T-H, @gmail.com. You know, it's really easy. Kevin Groth @gmail. I'd love to help. That's really what I find a lot of passion and fulfillment out of that. So if someone's out there listening and they want to just email back and forth or they want to call, I'm approachable. I'm here for anybody to pick their brain, because if I can, I don't know, we talked about this at my ACT U, a life touches a life touches a life, you know, and just by having that out there, your positive energy could be far more impactful than what you really know. Amen. So,
amen. So can we borrow you for 5 more minutes? Is that okay?
Of course.
Because you know what time it is. It is time where I get to ask you the questions that aren't so traditional. I got this from Dr. Len Chow, so thanks, Len. All right, so I'm going to shake it up here. And I've never asked you this, and I don't even know the questions either, but here's one of them. Is there anybody you could impersonate really well? Who is it? Would it be a celebrity or anyone even in your office?
Oh man, I'm a horrible impersonator. I don't know. Do you know any like nasally Midwestern type of?
My kids do this. Like they do this. There's a social media star who's really nasally, and they'll often talk like her. And I can't remember her name, but it's really hilarious.
I could probably do it, because that's just, I don't know. I'm a horrible. You can you impersonate anybody?
I could do a couple. I mean, Jack Nicholson is obviously an obvious one, but when I had hair, you remember Taxi? Do you ever remember Taxi with?
I'm too young for that.
Oh, you're too young for that. But there was a guy named Christopher Lloyd, and he was Reverend.
Yeah, Christopher Lloyd. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so he'd come into the office and he'd say, you know, hey, boss, can I have a raise? And they go, no, okie doke, you know? Yeah. Or when he took his driver's test, that was my favorite Taxi. No, this is way before you, but. He's taking the driver's test and the person goes, what does he, no, he's trying to learn like what different colors are. And they're helping him with he goes, what does a yellow light mean? They go, slow down. He goes, what? It was always like he was living in a weird world. No. And then
that was actually on our dental intel. Morning huddle.
Oh, was it really?
And none of us knew what it was. Now it makes sense.
Or you ever see Jim Carrey in Living Color when he played Fire Marshal Dill?
Sure.
That can be great.
Jim Carrey's so good.
No.
I'm a horrible impersonator.
Hey, that's okay. Have you ever received a really weird gift? If so.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What was it?
Our wedding gift from my cousin. I hope she's not listening to this. So we were opening up, and like you get these gifts off your registry typically, and that's cool. Like that's what we wanted, right? So we got this gift and she was so excited about it. I can't wait to give you the gift. We're like, what is it? We open it up and it's like, Allie just goes, that's my face. And it's a huge Afghan blanket with Allie and I and our like engagement photo. So we have like this gigantic, gigantic blanket with just a blown up version of us just like hugging on this blanket.
Oh, so, you got to share a photo or you got to bring it to a court. That would be awesome.
So that's like, we're always joking. Like whenever our daughter gets in trouble, we're going to be like, go to our blanket, like go wrap yourself up in that. So just like how on like our guest bed. So
when Sarah and I come stay like,
yeah, it's on your bed.
Welcome. We call this our room. We're gonna let you borrow it. So like, ah. How about,
you have any weird gifts?
Oh, I got the best one ever. And it's in my house. It'll be up in my house as long as I live forever. So we went to a white elephant Christmas party a couple of years ago. And the woman who was hosting it, she was just awesome. Like, just, she knew how to throw a party and everything. So white elephant, you know how that is. You grab this like trashy little gift. You're trying to make it fun. So like, there's one big white elephant gift. And so she like encouraged it, and it got opened, not by my wife, but by somebody else. And you open it up, and it's a large, really large frame photo of me holding a cat. So I'm amazingly like allergic to cats. Like, I can't even, and it's one of those awkward Christmas photos, like where I'm she had taken my head from Facebook and superimposed it on it. And it's got all these like vignettes of these cats. And like, my kids, my wife, like almost pushed down three other women. She's like, I'm leaving with that. And at the end, we got it, put it up in the house. My kids show it to everybody. This is a funny story. So I had these guys working construction in my basement one day. And it's up in the basement in my bar area type of thing. And they're like four burly guys. One of them's like missing a few teeth and he's got a cut off shirt. I go down there and I go, hey guys, thanks for being, you know, and they're all looking at me like,
what's with the cat guy?
And then one guy goes, sorry about your cat. I go, that's a joke. And they go, oh, thank you. Oh, we didn't know where we were. Like, like it was one of the most awkward. I'll send you a photo of it. You'll freaking love it. So
it's so funny. Yeah, I'll return it.
I do want a photo. I got to get a photo.
I got to get you the photo of the blanket. Yeah, it's so fun.
So this is, I mean, I really do learn about, okay, so here's one. This is an odd one. So if you were out to dinner with no cash, what would you do or say to get the bill paid? Have you ever been in a position where you didn't have any cash?
Oh, man.
Oh, shoot, I forgot my wallet, whatever.
I mean, I would happily do dishes. I would wait tables.
You would be the dishes guy.
I would love that. Yeah, no problem. I did dishes. I don't know. I have no problem doing dishes. That's an easy one whatever I could do.
No, your answer tells me everything, because I also have been clinically diagnosed as a wuss. And a lot of people say, I just walk out, or I'd say that guy's my favorite. No, I couldn't do it. Like, sweat, like figuring out stuff, or like, here's my name. Actually, you could take one of my kids. I'll
yeah. Let them work, do dishes, right?
So. Yeah. So, okay. Back in high school, any like strange memory that you're like, that was just weird that happened to you in the hallway, locker room, anything that you're like, wow, that was pretty wild, or something that people still remind you of today in high school?
Ooh, geez.
I'll go first.
If you think of something, I don't know anything.
Okay. One time I threw four interceptions in a football game. So whenever I see my buddies, they go, dude, remember that game you threw eight intercepts? I'm like, it was four. My mom caught the clipping out. I have it. No, they're like, no, it was eight interceptions. Like, you threw the whole, and so like to this day, I can't even shake it. So
no, I don't know. I didn't go through puberty till like junior year. So I was like 5 foot through. I mean, I didn't have any girlfriends during that time or anything like that, because nobody wants to date a little like shrimp. So but I don't have anything. No, I don't really have any like crazy memories or stories that I would think of that I can tell on air right now. So,
all right. Last one. I'm sorry. I'm going to keep it, because I just love this. Any weird nicknames you ever had in your whole life that you're like, you can't call me, like any nicknames or anything like people would call you that you're like, that's kind of stuck with me a little bit.
Mookie. Yeah. Mookie, my parents almost like, they were watching a World Series game, and like Mookie Williams, I think it was, that they were like, the next guy who gets the hit is we're gonna name our kid after that. And so he got up and hit a home run right after that. So
this is before you were born?
This is before I was born, but it kind of stuck that sometimes it was Mookie.
They never named you.
Never named me Mookie. No, no.
Is Kevin your real name?
Kevin is my real name. Yeah. So thankfully, but yeah, Mookie. You?
Yeah, to this day. So I walked down and played football at the University of Minnesota in 1988. We were horrible back then. So like just I was lucky to even be on the team. And I'll use the word play loosely because I never even played. But the equipment manager, Dick Mattson, who I'll never forget, like he could never say my name. He would come in, nicest guy ever. He just starts screaming, "You guys got to put your jock straps in there and clean this up. I am not your father. I'm not your mother." And Bernie, like he couldn't say my name. He's Bernie. So they call me Bernie, like every time. I'm like, my name is right here. You go, Bernie. And so all the guys next to me just still to this day, like, I couldn't even read your name. That's, you got no respect here. He couldn't even read your name. Bernie. Like, so to this day, they're like, Bernie.
That's awesome.
So, I don't know.
It's great.
It's fun stuff. Awesome, brother. Well, I appreciate you being here. We got to have you back again.
This is fun.
Again,
this is great.
Again. Really so, great. Hey, if you've stuck around this long,
yeah, right.
Podcast, we want to thank you. Number one, we're going to ask you to share this because if you enjoyed it like I did, just share it with your friends. Keep sending us suggestions for things that you guys want to see in the podcast and keep sticking around. And until we see you next time or you hear from us next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy the rest of your day. And there you have it. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Best Practices Show. I hope you sure did enjoy it. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us. We are always here for you. And if you haven't done so already, make sure you subscribe to the show on iTunes or wherever you consume podcasts. And if you really enjoy it, you can leave a comment or a 4 or 5 star review. But until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show.